Listeners, it's Sam here again, and just the usual shout out for our brilliant sponsors before this week's show. Paces Ahead have courses for the start of 2024, and listeners, here's a possible sweetener for you. I will be there at their first course of 2024. That's the 16th to the 19th of January. Please do come along and say hi if you catch me. It would be great to meet some of you if you're there. But there is also a course the following week from the 20th to the 23rd of January for those of you sitting in the first diet of 2024. Not only that, but they also have courses lined up for May as well, the 20th to the 23rd of May and the 28th to the 31st of May. I highly recommend booking on early to avoid disappointment. They very regularly get oversubscribed. If you can't make a course though, Pass Test have got you covered with their market-leading online revision paces resource. I think most pacer sitters would agree this is more or less essential to have to complement your ward-based preparation. So to get access, just click any of the links in the show notes labeled Pass Test. But enough on that for now, let's get started on this week's episode. Welcome, listeners, to this episode of the Pre-Paces podcast. I'm Dr. Sam Williams, and this week it's another solo episode for you. And the topic this time around is something I'm certainly no stranger to, and I'm sure many of you listening are not a stranger to either. This week's topic is medical error. Now, my medical motto is, show me a doctor who says they haven't made a mistake and I'll show you a liar. We all make mistakes in clinical practice. Now, some of you might be in your early career years and say, well, actually, I don't think I've made a mistake whilst I've been at work or whilst I've been practicing as a doctor. But the chances are you haven't realised you've made a mistake. The chances are it's been picked up without you knowing, maybe by one of the on-call team after you've gone home from your shift, or maybe your prescribing error was picked up by a pharmacist or another team member had to change the prescription on your behalf. The point is that no mistakes are intentional. And some are more serious than others, and that's why as a medical reg, but also as a specialty registrar in whatever specialty you might be wanting to pursue, knowing how to deal with medical error and how to respond to it are going to be critical to your development, not just as a registrar, but understanding of this will go all the way into your consultant career. As a consultant, any mistakes that are made are amplified because ultimately, as the senior decision maker, their decisions are often more significant than those of us sitting paces. So obviously this is really important for your clinical practice. But why is it important in paces? Well, firstly, as I've already said, medical error is extremely common. The NHS National Reporting and Learning System received over 2 million patient safety incident forms from April 2021 to March 2022, 30% of which reported some harm to patients. But with paces in mind, according to Pass Test, medical error was the second most common communication station in the first PACES diet of 2023. So that's why I'm bringing you this episode. Another important topic we'll come on to discuss later on is duty of candor, which is so important to anyone working in healthcare. And we'll go into the details surrounding root cause analysis, when this should be performed and what it involves. So without further ado, let's get into discussing medical error. So, as I've already alluded to, the most likely station that this could come up in your exams is likely to be the 10-minute communication and ethics station, which will occur after either the abdominal or respiratory examination stations. So, just getting started on some of the basics, the first obvious question is, what is medical error? And this can be briefly defined as any mistake made in the context of healthcare. The important thing to figure out in your vignette, which you might be presented with before the station, is what is the nature of this medical error? The medical error may comprise direct patient harm. For example, this might be prescribing a medication to a patient with a known allergy to that medication, or a medication which is known to have an adverse effect on a condition that they may suffer with. For example, giving an antibiotic to a patient with epilepsy, which may lower the seizure threshold for that patient. In each of these examples, the patient may go on to have an allergic reaction of some sort, or in the second example, they may then go on to suffer a seizure. And a very straightforward vignette for you would be to speak to the patient or the patient's next of kin after that event had taken place. The next possible vignette might be something where harm may have occurred but was prevented. For example, either of the previous examples I gave may well have been picked up by another member of the team. Maybe the nursing staff noticed the prescription error, or maybe it was picked up by a pharmacist. And although a prescribing error was made, it was not acted upon. And this is something which you may have to communicate again to the patient or to the next of kin. And lastly, one other possible option which may come up in PACES is something where an error has occurred but where harm may still occur in the future, although it may not have happened yet. For example, this may be failing to mention that a patient requires follow-up for a condition and they are later found that a condition has gone unmonitored for a period of time, or alternatively discharging a patient with abnormal results which is then acted on by someone else and they then have to return to hospital even if no harm had been done. But back to our PACES station. Now there are several skills which are going to be absolutely critical to this station, and they're going to be even more important now as the communication station is shorter at only 10 minutes long. The clinical vignette you'll receive before you enter the station will provide some details about the patient concerned, who as part of the healthcare team committed the error, and likely whether or not any harm has come to the patient so far. So hopefully you'll be furnished with those details before you enter the station. As with any communication station, it's important to introduce yourself by your name and role, confirm who you're talking to. This might be the patient, but it could also be a relative of the patient. Obviously, you're going to explain the purpose of the conversation and ask their consent. Is it okay to have that conversation now? Now, one of the things which I always found very difficult in the communication station is establishing rapport, or at least maybe I didn't find it difficult to do myself, but it was a difficult thing to demonstrate. And the things that I found to get around that, or at least to obviously demonstrate that you're attempting to build rapport with the patient or the next of kin, are very straightforward, general niceties you can apply in everyday life as well as in the exam. Ask how they like to be called. It's very simple, but allows them to set the terms of the conversation and communicate in a way which suits them. Ask if anyone else is expecting to join us for the discussion. Obviously, this isn't, probably it's not going to happen in PACES, but it can be helpful in clinical practice if they're expecting more visitors later in the day, for example. And lastly, this is something that harks back to our medical school OSCE exams, which I'm sure many of you will be familiar with, but I often ask if they want to move to a side room or a relative's room to have the discussion, and I explain that I've handed my bleep to a colleague so we won't be disturbed. Now, to hopefully put things into perspective for you, I'm going to provide a case, so hopefully you guys can follow along and apply some of the principles we're going to be explaining through the course of this episode, and also just make you consider more widely how you would react or how you would give an answer if this were to come up in your PACES. So the clinical vignette for you reads like this. Mrs. Jones is a 40-year-old lady who was admitted earlier today with pyelonephritis. She was seen by one of the foundation doctors as part of the acute medical take. She has a background of epilepsy and was prescribed ciprofloxacin. She unfortunately went on to suffer a tonic-clonic seizure during her admission. She has since recovered and the event has been reported to the supervising consultant. Your consultant suspects the ciprofloxacin had a significant effect in provoking the seizure and has asked you to speak to the patient about the error. Your task is to explain the error to the patient and answer any questions that she may have. So I'll give you a bit of time to think over the case, and towards the end we'll come on to some of the common questions which you may be asked either by the patient or by the next of kin in this type of scenario. But next we're going to be discussing an absolutely underpinning fundamental principle of practice when it comes to discussing medical error, and that is called duty of candor. Now, what does duty of candor mean in our day-to-day practice? Well, it involves being open, honest, and transparent with patients and their relatives when medical errors are made. And this applies not just to doctors, but to the whole healthcare team. Now, you may be aware of duty of candor, but you may not be aware that there are two types of duty of candor. There is statutory duty of candor, and then there is professional duty of candor. And the differences between these can be explained relatively straightforwardly. Professional duty of candor pertains to the ethical responsibilities outlined by professional codes of conduct. So this is going to be things such as good medical practice described by the GMC. That's the General Medical Council for any listeners listening outside of the UK, which is the body that regulates the medical profession. And so this basically involves speaking to the patient or their relative, providing a true account of what has happened and what was known at the time, and provide them the opportunity to ask questions, as well as apologising for the mistake occurring. The incident should also be documented and reported by those involved. But this differs slightly from statutory duty of candour, which is actually laid out in the Health and Social Care Act of 2008. And what this means is that each organisation or hospital has an overarching legal duty for healthcare workers to be open and honest with families. And this involves any practice which is governed by the Care Quality Commission in the UK. And in order for statutory duty of candour to apply, there are specific criteria which need to be met in order for any event or error to be triggered as what is called a notifiable safety incident. Now, these need to meet three criteria. Number one, the event must be unintended or unexpected. Number two, the event must have occurred during the provision of an activity which the CQC regulates. And number three, in the reasonable opinion of a healthcare professional, the notifiable safety incident could or appears to have resulted in either death or severe or moderate harm to the person receiving the care. This may also include prolonged psychological harm. And so the legal framework outlines that the organisation must tell the relevant person face to face that the event has occurred. They must apologise for the error. They must provide a true account of what happened, explaining what is known at that point, and explain what further inquiries or investigations will take place, including a root cause analysis, which we will talk about towards the end of this episode. They must follow this up with an apology in writing and continue to provide updates on any inquiries. They must also keep a secure written record of all meetings and communications with the relevant parties. So anyway, now we've got the boring basics and the legal stuff out of the way. The first step you're going to have to take in your station is to basically outline the situation which has unfolded. Now, I often found the most straightforward way of approaching this station after having confirmed who you are speaking to is to confirm their current understanding of the situation. And their reaction to this might vary depending on the scenario. It's a spectrum from they may know absolutely nothing at all about what's happened and you might be the person telling them for the first time. They may know the basic details. For example, they've been given a drug which they shouldn't have been. Or they could be an absolute nightmare and this station may well stray into the realms of managing an angry patient or an angry relative. And we know that for the communication stations, all of the patients or relatives you will be speaking to are going to be actors. And so these people are experts at feigning anger, frustration, disappointment, sadness. They might say they want to make a complaint, and managing the patient or the relative in front of you could make or break your station. So this is a really important point to get, is that approaching and managing the patient in front of you is going to make or break your station. Now, basic communication skills here are going to be absolutely paramount, and we're going to be applying a few of the principles that we've talked about in previous episodes of this podcast. So the first thing which I think is really important in these types of stations where you are potentially delivering some important or sometimes some bad news, delivering the information in chunks at a slow pace and making your language clear and avoiding jargon. Intermittently checking the understanding of the person you're speaking to, Hopefully this is nothing new to those of you who have listened to previous episodes of the podcast, but we are employing skills we have used before, all the way back in episode 4, which was Breaking Bad News, and similarly again in episode 23, where we discussed difficult conversations. And these are skills which can be stretched across any of these types of communication stations, and it's critically important in all of them to deliver the information in chunks with intermittent checking of understanding of the person you're speaking to. Now, demonstrating empathy is another skill which is going to be necessary in this station, and acknowledging the patient's or relative's concerns is so, so important here. Simple phrases like, "I can appreciate how this must be really upsetting," or "I can understand why this would make you frustrated," can just help to settle the tone. And sometimes the surrogates, the actors, will respond positively to this sort of empathetic speech. The other thing to consider is that apologizing for what has gone wrong is not an admission of guilt or a liability. So it is critically important to apologize for what has happened. You will not get in trouble in PACES or in your clinical practice for apologizing that a medical error has occurred. Now, the next part of the explanation should detail whether or not any harm was caused as a result of the medical error. And this is where we're going to flick back to our scenario for Mrs. Jones, who is our lady who suffered a tonic-clonic seizure, possibly as a result of incorrectly prescribed ciprofloxacin. Now, some of you might be thinking, well, how can I categorize how much harm was actually sustained by the patient? And this is a spectrum as well. This might be from no harm, so the patient was basically unaffected by the medical error. It might be something like mild harm, where they had additional unplanned hospital treatment. Or something which would constitute moderate harm might be an unexpected admission to intensive care, while severe harm would obviously include things like patient death or permanent disability as a result of medical error. Now, one thing which would have been helpful in the scenario is to know whether or not Mrs. Jones actually required any further treatment for her tonic-clonic seizure. But I think we can quite safely say that she hasn't suffered moderate harm, as the vignette has stated she has since recovered. It doesn't mention that she was admitted to intensive care. And this is important for one particular reason, which we'll come on to talk about when we talk about root cause analyses. The critical thing about root cause analyses is that they will be performed for anything which is deemed to have caused moderate harm or more. So in other words, they're not performed where a patient hasn't come to harm, and they're not performed for cases where only mild harm has been sustained by the patient. And this might become relevant if you are asked some slightly more difficult questions by the patient or their relative when they come to ask you questions about what is going to be done next following the error. So let's go through some of those now. And obviously the answers will be dependent on the exact scenario, but there will likely be similar themes which will reappear regardless of the vignette or scenario in your station. So let's get into some of these common questions which might be put to you and how you should go about framing your answer. So, awkward question number one. How could this have occurred and who is responsible? Now, as tempting as it might be to say something like, well, it was obviously the F1's fault because they prescribed the medication. In honesty, everything in medicine is a team effort, and we all have a duty to look at patient allergies, adverse reactions, patients' past medical histories, and understand which drugs may or may not be suitable. Ultimately, in a situation like this where a medication has been given, yes, the prescriber should check firstly for allergic reactions, but also there is a bit of advanced knowledge there in that not every doctor would possibly know that quinolone antibiotics can reduce the seizure threshold. So this may not be something that you would expect a nurse administering the drug to recognize. However, ward pharmacists often are. And I think you'd probably be surprised the number of times where you are clocked by either a nurse or a pharmacist who actually say, actually, I'm not sure this is correct for this patient. And it's always worth taking their advice on board, or at least addressing their concerns if one of those members of staff comes to you with a concern with any medication that has been prescribed. Ultimately, it's likely a combination of factors which has led to the drug being given. And it is rarely helpful to say that it's any one person who is responsible. The other thing which might be worth mentioning in our specific case, which although it is a bit of medical knowledge which formally shouldn't be tested in the communication station, is that our patient was admitted with an infection, and infection can also lower the seizure threshold. So in our specific scenario, it is likely a multifactorial seizure which she has suffered, which is likely due to a combination of the infection plus the ciprofloxacin as well. Right, moving on to question number two, which might be posed to you. Is there any risk of future harm? Now, again, this might depend very heavily on the exact scenario, but it's important to just be honest in this situation. And the other thing to say with all of these questions is it's equally important to say you don't know. You're likely to get into more trouble trying to fudge an answer which ends up being incorrect than just saying that you don't know. It's almost akin to in the examination stations coming up with signs that aren't there in the examination. If you make up an answer which is wrong or which you can't possibly know the answer to, it's much worse than just simply saying that you don't know. The next thing which might be posed to you by a concerned patient or relative who has been a victim of medical error is they might say, well, I want to make a complaint. How do I make a complaint? And on one hand, it can be quite tempting to try and convince them out of it or say, oh, you know, this isn't the type of thing which is worthy of making a complaint. And that is the exact wrong way to go about it. The patient or the relative is obviously well within their rights to make a complaint if they've been the subject of medical error. And this is something which comes up frequently in medical practice and in exams. And the answer is pretty much the same wherever you work, providing you are in the UK. And the correct answer is, of course, to signpost them to the Patient Advice and Liaison Service, otherwise known as PALS in UK hospitals, which is present throughout most hospitals, and they can approach them for help and support with having their voice heard regarding this specific error. So if ever anyone asks about making a complaint and the mechanisms through which they can do that, signposting to PALS is most commonly the correct answer. And convincing them not to go through with the complaint is most likely going to land you with a unsatisfactory. And the next question which might come up is if they are really pushing down the line of, well, I want to blame someone, who can I blame and how do I know that they're going to learn from this mistake and how do we know that it's not going to happen again? And so again, this will slightly depend on how serious the error is in your given scenario. But if we take the example that we have here, that we have a potential prescribing error from a foundation doctor, and there has been a mild degree of harm come to the patient, this could be extended or phrased in as well as what is the organisation going to do to ensure this doesn't happen again? So one thing you can mention, which we mentioned in our scenario, is that it has already been raised to the supervising consultant, and you should always offer to bring them to have the conversation with the patient or the relative. And more broadly, it would be helpful to say that you will also raise it to the senior nursing and pharmacy teams, so all are aware of the error having taken place. And secondly, You should mention that you will complete a clinical incident form so that it is formally recorded. This will be sent to the appropriate person to action to ensure, as best we can, that this type of error won't happen again. But if they continue pushing down the line of questioning related to the specific prescriber or doctor who prescribed the medication in error, I'd explain that the doctor or prescriber in question has a clinical or educational supervisor, and that the usual process would be that they would discuss the case with their supervisor and formally reflect on any changes in practice that they could have made before and after having made this error. And this is important for their own development And I guess that's another thing to emphasize to the patient is that everyone started somewhere. No doctor is perfect, and medical error unfortunately does happen. But learning from the error is more important than apportioning blame when discussing about the next steps forward for anyone who is involved in any medical error, regardless of the size or magnitude of error which has occurred. And the last sort of slightly awkward question I thought that the patient may come to you with is, well, I want to speak to your senior about this and I'm not happy at all with your explanation. So in clinical practice, this is, you know, pretty straightforward. You just always say yes, of course. We can at some point in time get the consultant to come down and have a conversation with you. It won't matter because it's in an exam and, you know, that you obviously aren't going to go and get a consultant to speak to them, but always say yes, that's going to happen in due course. In real life, this can be slightly more difficult. Obviously, consultants are extremely busy in their day-to-day work, and so getting them down at the right time, for example, when the next of kin is visiting, can be slightly more difficult. But most consultants will want to avoid a complaint just as much as you do, and asking them to speak to a patient or relative in order to prevent a complaint is almost certainly something they will thank you for afterwards. Listeners, I am delighted to welcome a brand new podcast partner, Scrubs, in all caps, S-C-R-B-S. This company is run by two GPs and they make awesome scrubs. I've been wearing mine for a couple of weeks now and they absolutely strike the balance between being comfortable, functional and appearing professional at work at a decent price. And they're even more affordable when you use the discount code PACES10 to get 10% off any order. Just head to scrubs.co.uk, S-C-R-B-S.co.uk and use the code PACES10 for 10% off your order at the checkout. So just to finish off our medical error episode, one of the last things I wanted to talk about was root cause analysis, which is a bit of a buzzword when it comes to medical error, but you don't really get much formal teaching unless you're directly involved in a root cause analysis about what the process involves, what it's used for, when it's used, who's involved, and ultimately what the outcomes can be. So I thought we'd just spend a few minutes talking about root cause analysis. And so for anyone who hasn't heard of what a root cause analysis is, this is a process for investigating serious incidents to examine why and how they have occurred. The purpose of the report is to provide a formal record of the investigation process, and it's also an opportunity to share the lessons that can be learned from any individual case. Now, the next question is, well, what types of medical error prompt a root cause analysis being performed? Well, there's no definitive list of what incidents or events should be investigated with a root cause analysis, but there are general themes which apply to these types of incidents. And if this were to come up in your exam, it would definitely be worth knowing whether the medical error in question would qualify to be investigated with a root cause analysis. So some of them, which certainly would prompt a root cause analysis, include things such as unexpected or avoidable death, unexpected or avoidable injury resulting in serious harm, including those where an injury required treatment to prevent death or serious harm, any error related to abuse, any incidents that affect the organization's ability to continue to deliver an acceptable quality of healthcare services, and incidents that cause widespread public concern, which may result in the loss of confidence in healthcare services. And lastly, the last thing which may prompt a root cause analysis, which I'm sure is a buzz phrase which you may have heard before, is never events. Now, these are a series of events which you would hope would never happen, but actually, in the year from April 21 to March 22, there were 407 never events, which for events which are never meant to happen, a rate of one per day within the NHS is not amazing. And obviously, zero would be a much more preferable number. So I guess the next question is, what is a never event? Well, that can include things such as wrong site surgery. So basically operating, for example, on someone's left knee rather than their right knee. Surgical instruments being left inside a patient after surgery, when they should have been removed. And this is you know, particularly pertinent with things like swabs, which have a radio opaque marker in them, which can be detected on x-rays to detect whether or not swabs have been retained. The use of a wrong implant or prosthesis during a procedure is also a never event. Administration of a medication through the wrong route is another never event. The use of a misplaced nasogastric or orogastric tube is a never event. And last on the list is scalding of a patient with surgical tools or chemicals. So I hope that gives you a flavour of just some of the events which would prompt a root cause analysis. Now, the root cause analysis investigators usually work for the same trust but are independent from the clinical team. So it won't be the consultant in charge of the patient's care who completes the root cause analysis process. But the process, put in basic terms, involves the investigators speaking to all members of the team who are involved in the care of that patient and collating all the information regarding the sequence of events that led to the error. They then draft a formal report, which is then put forward as a draft to the patient and or their family, the staff involved in the event, and their managers, including the senior managers, such as the clinical lead. And all parties are asked to check the facts related to the case. The report is then amended as appropriate until the final report is updated and agreed by all parties. The final report is then sent for review to the hospital executives, which might include the medical director and or the director of nursing. And I guess whilst it wouldn't be necessary to know absolutely all of this in PACES, I do think this is something which is undertaught in our medical education, unless you actually go through a root cause analysis, which, touch wood, I haven't had the misfortune of going through it yet, but I know people who have. And knowing how these processes structure and function it can just be quite reassuring if it's something that you have to go through your career. So I hope that's helpful to anyone who has to go through a root cause analysis in future or is involved in one. And lastly, in our scenario with our patient or relative, it's obviously important to say that you will document the conversation to ensure that all members of the team are made aware of the error. And I guess lastly, if they do ask something about a root cause analysis, obviously if it's something like a never event, then you are able to have the knowledge to say, yes, this is something which would require a root cause analysis. But equally, I don't feel like it's something that if you weren't sure, they could fail you on. But if you knew that it was an error which would prompt a root cause analysis and you mentioned that, I think that would be a gold star mark for you. But listeners, that was pretty much all I had to say on this episode of Medical Error. As I say, it's one of the most common PACES stations which can occur in the Communication and Ethics Station. And I do hope you found this episode helpful in your preparation for the Ethics and Communication Stations. But that is just about all the time that I have for this week's show. Please don't forget to like, follow and subscribe to the podcast and leave a 5-star review wherever you listen to your podcasts. I always love to hear from you, so please do get in touch on the Twitter, which is at PrePaces Podcast, or via the website. If you really want to go above and beyond and support the show, you can do that at buymeacoffee.com/PrePacesPodcast. But for now, we are just about out of time. I've been Dr. Sam Williams. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time on the PrePaces Podcast.